do diet and lifestyle for men and women to give ourselves the best shot at conceiving?
Okay, so it's so tricky because men get away with a little bit of murder.
Okay. I know. Always, it's so all, as unfair. Always, yeah. with everything, always.
It's okay. so unfair, okay? But for the women, what we need to remember is, like, our eggs are the business. Okay. We make one. They can make hundreds of millions per ejaculate.
Yes.
Every few days, more hundreds of millions. And it takes us, on average, a month to make one good egg, right? So when we're talking diet and lifestyle, for women, we are talking more longevity.
Yes.
You know, it's about, that's why I'm so strong on pushing fertility awareness younger.
Yeah.
So we get all this contraception talk. Where's our fertility talk? You know what I mean?
I know.
In school or whatever. So for women, there are some basics you need to cover, but overall, a healthy diet and lifestyle is obviously going to be the key. Mm. But in terms of the questions like vitamins, you want your folic acid, or folate is the ideal version of it.
Okay.
And then your vitamin D. They matter.
Yes. Yep.
There's a lot of other vitamins that are either in investigation or maybe have returned to say they don't work but they don't cause harm. So we might take them anyway, and that's absolutely fine. But the major ones that, and I suppose I hate talking about this topic because it is emotive, is weight. Okay. Like, fat cells are toxic to us when we have too many, and it's also really dangerous when we have too few. You know what I mean? So it's a total balance.
100%.
A total balance.
Yeah.
I learned, just reading through statistics in order to just explain how important this was, that if your BMI is 43, you are 43% less likely to get pregnant than someone with just a normal BMI.
A normal BMI. And, you know, it's just, and you know what, I don't think it needs to be so emotive. I can see you're coming from a really, you know, compassionate place. But I say it all the time as well. And, you know, it's just, look, a healthy BMI. So, you know, and I know then as well, people are saying, is BMI, you know,
really a good measurement.
But look, it's a yardstick.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
And
exactly.
I think that in our, we all kind of know where our healthy weight is, or if we're going up or down. And being low in weight is as detrimental as being high in weight. So you need to be in that healthy zone. And it is important.
And then there's a super positive message that comes with that, that for every, we'll say, point in BMI you drop, and we're just using BMI as the rough guide, you're 10% more likely to get pregnant.
Yes.
Like, that's so powerful.
Yes.
So I'm not into the negativity of, like, wait, wait, wait. I'm more into, oh, look what the facts have come out with. If you just lose a little bit, I know how hard it is, for sure, but it can really help you.
Sure.
And there's nothing negative in that, in my opinion.
I agree with you. I agree with you totally. And how about for men? BMI is important for men too?
BMI, age is more important. So BMI is definitely important.
Yes.
Okay, for men, that they're in the normal. Otherwise, you're going to have this buildup of excess androgens.
Okay.
And that can have an impact on sperm quality, sperm numbers, sperm motility, your overall testosterone.
Okay.
You might end up with more female hormone driving down what would be normal to, I would say, in terms of like a semen analysis.
Yeah.
So it is important. Unfortunately, it does still lie more on us, which is the rubbish part. But definitely BMI for men. Age is not as light as it was once thought.
Yes, I read that recently.
Mm.
Yeah.
So we all were sort of like letting men off because some men will have babies in their 70s.
Yes.
But when they did a study in New York across five of the clinics there, they found that if they had women between like 29 and 35 with their husbands that were 10 to 15 years older than them, they were less likely to get pregnant than the same group with husbands within 5 years of the age. So, I mean, it's not a forever put off your fertility question on either men or female.
Yeah.
So when I talk like lifestyle, I'm also talking about planning to have your family.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot of rhetoric around plenty of time for that, no rush. And that can be true and it can be dangerous.
You're right. You're right. Because it's a real thing, because there's plenty of time for that. And, you know, pursue your career and, you know, look after yourself. But at the same time, we have to be realistic with ourselves as well. Because, look, I mean, I 100% fell into the trap, right? But look, you know, it is what
everyone
it is.
Everyone does.
It is what it is. So I, you know, put it off, and I was pursuing my career as career. And I'll have babies eventually. And then the eventually, and then it became too late, you know, and look, because of my cancer diagnosis, and I had IVF, and look, that's fine. And I, you know, things will, you know, the cards will fall wherever they may. Mm-hmm. But I certainly was that person who was like, oh, it'll be fine. And then all of a sudden thinking, oh, whoa, okay. So you do have to plan and you know, coming into your 30s, you can't be delaying
sure,
it too much.
That's sort of it. Or maybe think of a backup plan.
Okay.
But I guess it's something like, you know, I sometimes feel like a bit of a hypocrite because I have my degree and my career and I got all this by delaying maybe having children.
Yeah.
But then I suppose I've always been comfortable with the idea and the awareness, I think it more is than the idea that maybe I'll have to have treatment.
Yes. Or you know, something as well that I've learned as well is that, you know, I am becoming okay with childlessness as well, if that's what it is. So, and I totally agree with you. Look, I'm in the same zone as you because we're giving this information about fertility. We have delayed it ourselves. Neither of us have children. But
it's a tricky spot.
It is.
That
it
you
is.
Find yourself yeah. in. So I'm not telling anyone to go have children at 22.
Yeah, exactly. Look, but education and just being more mindful of it.
Sure.
Yeah.
And maybe, like, sometimes I hear people talk about, like, I haven't been to the GP in 5 years. Like, it's a badge of honour. And I think we do that with a lot of medicine now.
Yeah.
And or, like, health. We think of it as medicine. That's the way I should say
yes,
it.
Yes.
Rather than thinking of health as yours to claim.
Yeah.
So how are my vitamins and minerals looking? How's my cholesterol? My blood pressure okay? Probably, because you're young.
Yeah.
But what about like your AMH?
I know.
Which is a blood test for anyone who doesn't
know. Yeah, let's talk about AMH.
It's a blood test that you do. It's really simple, serum blood, and it will tell you your anti-Müllerian hormone. Mm-hmm. So essentially, what we have is in our ovaries, we're born with the amount of eggs we'll ever have in a lifetime.
Yes.
And I think it was sort of misrepresented that you lose one egg a cycle. You don't. You lose your AMH of eggs per cycle.
Okay.
So one will grow and mature.
Yes.
The other immature ones will be just wasted. They're gone. They're reabsorbed into the body. It's not an issue as such until that number starts getting lower. What it means is if we do need to intervene in the future, if the AMH is low, we're going to get less eggs and IVF is less successful. So AMH at 22 will be high. More than likely for 99% of people.
Mm-hmm.
But you could at least watch it. If you saw at maybe 30 your AM, maybe do it every 3 to 5 years.
Okay.
You know, in your 20s, twice in the whole decade.
Okay.
And then maybe in your 30s, every 2 years, that if something was coming up and you were deferring, it might be worth knowing. You may change your mind as to your approach in life with this information.
Yes.
You know?
That's a really nice approach to AMH because I'm always nervous about AMH when patients ask me about it, right? Because I get this, it's frenetic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, I've just started my PhD and I don't know, should I do my AMH? And I'm thinking, okay, but what do I advise this girl to do? You're advising in a lot calmer, more a long term. Don't leave it until like the snap decision. I better do my AMH and I better make a decision tonight about what I'm doing.
Yeah,
you know, like, and that's because
that's what I
feel is surrounded with AMH.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh damn, I better do something now. You're saying keep an eye on it because then it'll be in the back of your head and it'll allow you to plan for the future just in a more kind of in a calm and, you know, planned out way.
Exactly. And maybe you get to 30 and your career is going from strength to strength and you're so happy. And you figure, oh, my AMH mightn't be now in the most ideal category, let's say, because they do bracket them off depending on age. Well, then maybe you might be a person who'd consider egg freezing.
Yes.
But only you rarely make full decisions without full information. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So someone who says, oh, I'd never egg freeze. I wonder, would you change your mind? I probably would.
Yeah.
You know, if I then found out, okay.
Yeah.
So now we might be working with less than I imagined.
Yeah.
Maybe I freeze some eggs. They're just a backup.
Yes.
I never use them. They're just there and it's a possibility for the future, you know, for me and a potential future partner if you don't have somebody at that point.
Yes. Or I mean, or even if you're with somebody, I mean, you know, you, why not?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. If you're with somebody and it's not, let's say, completely, you know, definite, egg freezing is a great idea. Mm. If you were, you know, like engaged or newly married, maybe embryo freezing is a good idea.
Yes.
With all the success that embryos bring.
Yeah. Interesting point. And you're like that point you said about making decisions without the full information, like it's so true. And because I was that person, like maybe about 18 months ago, I was the person who's saying no, I wouldn't, I'm not going to do egg freezing, and no, that won't be for me. And just because I didn't have all the information, and if I was told that, you know, things would change and your fertility isn't a given, and you know, you're not going, it's not going to be this kind of waking up in the morning and saying, you know, let's start a family now, you know, it's just, there's just so much more to it than that. And I just think, like, we don't need to be frightened of egg freezing or
I really don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't know if you think this, but I thought when I was a midwife, I didn't know anything about fertility or IVF or anything.
No. Yeah, not really. You know what, for me, right, as a GP and as a medical student, it was fertility happens in the fertility clinics and that's kind of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I agree with you, yeah.
It's totally. Sort of like I remember having a talk about it and it was very much, it's probably the woman.
I know. Yeah, no, or yeah, no, it's the woman's too old. Yeah.
That was it. Yeah. It was sort of like, that was all of the picture we ever got.
Yeah.
When I was like in the labor ward and somebody had a baby via IVF, I thought this was like a totally different thing. Like,
yeah.
Complete ignorance. I didn't even know what I didn't know.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I'm the same.
So 100%. Ignorant, like, to what was going on.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, oh, it's literally the exact same. It's just helping you to make the same baby you can make. You
anyway,
know,
yes.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, I do. I feel that, we'll say, the sort of unknown of IVF scares people away from actually looking at what it realistically is and how, if you want your career and you want a family, some people won't, but if you want a family in the future, maybe it's worth kind of looking at it both ways and thinking, right, what could I do to increase my chance of having a baby in the future.
Yeah.
And it's not just baby number one. That's what I tell everyone.
I know. We all get fixated on baby number one.
I want
you
to have your family. You know what I mean?
I know.
So maybe like baby number one comes by intercourse.
Yeah.
And then baby number two or three just doesn't come for a very long time. Yeah. And then you can go back to these 30-year-old eggs.
Yeah.
And have your chance for baby number two or three or whatever.
That's a really amazing point. We get so obsessed with baby number one. Mm. Yeah, we forget about the family. Yeah, you're making so much sense. And I think looking back, I was that person who was saying I would never do that because I just didn't know. And I didn't really have my head properly screwed on, and I got like a dose of reality. But like what you're saying just makes so much sense. And I think we need to remove the stigma from it.
Totally. It's the stigma that's the killer. It's like, I always remember, you know, Monica and Friends was the first person on TV to say period. And I feel like that's the fertility 20 whatever years later, you know?
Like, I suppose we could talk probably to maybe a psychologist about the
impact,
the stigma of it. There's such stigma associated
it's
with it.
It's almost like a win-lose thing that it's not.
Yeah.
But we approach it in a win-lose manner when it's actually just a grey, you know, sea of change and like psychology for sure associated with it. It's just so different. Like, then those you will ever realize if you don't have to look at your fertility from a kind of a serious, okay, standpoint. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, okay. So we've done a little bit about about diet, exercise, the importance of BMI, folic acid, vitamin D.
For the men, I'll jump in on that. Vitamins C and zinc.
They're
the two you really want. Like, they are the tried and tested. Just your RDA of vitamin C and zinc, because you're already getting those vitamins in other foods and fortified, you know, milks and that you're hopefully in your balanced diet getting. So you're taking this little bit extra and it really does help with sperm production.
Yeah. I learned that recently because I did like an online tutorial from the Waterstone Clinic, and the embryologist in Cork, he said that, which is brand new information for me. So that's really interesting.
Yeah.
So zinc for men.
Yeah. Zinc and vitamin C for men. You want that like antioxidants, and you want that zinc to drive the development of the sperm. Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Amazing. Okay. So when should a couple attend their GP or think about seeking fertility treatment?
Yeah, so my advice to all my friends, and this is kind of the best way I can give it, is I would say you go to your GP before you ever start trying. Okay. Yeah,
lovely advice.
I just think, first of all, it's a support and it's sort of just marking. This too will probably be the person who shares care into your pregnancy. Mm. So just having that feeling of trust and, you know, a chat with them and that. Yeah. And having some bloods done. Basics.
Lovely. Yeah. That's, yeah, perfect.
Just the basics. Like
thyroid. And,
thyroid. Yeah. I think what gives a lot of people like a little bit of a fright is that your thyroid can be normal for all other areas of your life. Mm. But TSH should be below 2.5 to reduce the risk of miscarriage.
Okay.
So
okay.
Even though you would never be treated with Eltroxin, on, you know, a day
on
to
a normal day,
if your TSH was 4, like it's not abnormal. But what all the recent studies have shown is it increases your risk of miscarriage if your TSH is above 2.5.
Okay.
So even though small, having these bloods tested, maybe like your rubella status, do you need a vaccine?
Yeah.
You know, like how is your overall, your vitamin D levels, your B levels? You know, how are you in general? Because pregnancy will give your body a hit.
Sure. Yeah. That's really nice advice as well. And, you know, to make sure your smears are up to date as well.
For
actually,
sure.
Add into that as well. Mm-hmm. That you're just getting a bit of an idea of where you're at from a general health point of view.
Yes. Before you ever start trying, it's just a good idea, I think, anyway.
Yeah.
And then, so now you're trying.
Yeah.
Right. What I get a lot of messages and it'll be like, I have 3 cycles a year, but somebody told me to try for the year. And I'm like, no, we can already tell there's an issue there.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, because if you only have 3 periods, you've only ovulated 3 times. And have you even ovulated properly?
Yeah, you might not have even ovulated.
Do you know? Yeah. So like there, it's worth seeing a clinic or a GP or whomever feels comfortable to treat maybe this ovulation issue. If you know that the gentleman might have a low sperm count from mumps or whatever in his history, then it might be worth speaking to your GP early to find out what do they recommend.
Yeah.
Do they think you should have a semen analysis before you ever start trying?
Okay.
Because you're talking about trying, and if it's not working, no matter how many times I tell you not to get stressed, you're going to get stressed.
I know. It's so difficult.
Like,
yeah.
I'm always being like hypocrite because I'm like, if we look at the statistics.
That's the nature of our job, though, isn't it?
Exactly.
Because we're giving out facts, but I mean, look, nobody's perfect.
But I for sure know I would be a stressed person.
I would too. And, you know, it's so difficult because it's like, you know, time goes by and time is so critical and it's so difficult for
and
people.
And we're used to, you know, kind of planning everything.
Yes.
So I'll go to school, I'll go to college, I'll get this, I'll buy that, I'll, you know, and then this is just out of our control.
Totally out of our control. That was something I remember when I first was diagnosed with cervical cancer and then my, you know, my fertility came into question. And I remember just saying that to my mom. I was like, I always just thought that I would go to school, I go to college, I get my degree, I do the GP scheme, I get married, and then we'd kind of wait, and then I'd have children. And it's just all of a sudden just like I think that feeling for women is so, and men as well, it's so difficult. You're right, like, and we can't control it, and we can't, like, you know, everything now is so instantaneous, you know, and you can just like click this to get that and this to do that. And it doesn't work that way with fertility.
Just health in general, but fertility is
is
sort of the fright for more younger people than any other health thing.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You're absolutely right for for young women as well. Mm. Yeah. So if we're, for trying.
Yeah. Then. So I've got, like, I always say anyway, just assume you're couple number 90.
Okay.
Approach it as couple number 90. And what that means essentially is that if you take 100 couples, 20 will be pregnant in month 1.
Okay.
On their very first month trying, 20 will be pregnant.
Okay.
To get 50 of the 100 pregnant, so 50%, it'll take 6 months.
Yep.
Okay, so it starts getting slower, but still very possible to get pregnant. In order to get 90 of 100 couples pregnant, it will take 12 months, 12 cycles. That is not infertility.
Yes.
But it's incredibly stressful.
Sure. Yeah. But it's not infertility. But yes.
But I want people to feel empowered. Just assume you're couple number 90.
Yeah.
Don't. Okay. Everyone's going to assume they're the first 20. I think. I just think
they want to be the first 20.
Want to be the first 20. But when you get to kind of cycle two or three, if it's not happening, like, you're probably,
you're still
by all intents and purposes, not going to end up in the IVF grouping if that's your biggest fear. And if that is your biggest fear, you need to just maybe become more aware of what IVF actually is, because it's not as scary as it sounds.
Yeah.
So that would be my two kind of approach. If you're over 35, though,
yeah,
get checked out with a fertility specialist 6 months in.
Yes,
because
6 months,
time
yeah.
is more important to you yes. than it is at 30.
Yes. Okay, yeah. So at age 30, you're looking at about trying for a year. Mm-hmm. And then at age 35, you're at, it's for 6 months.
6 months, you get tested. Maybe it's something like, you know, test the hormone levels. They seem fine. Test the tubes. They're fine. Move forward.
Yeah, okay.
You know what I mean? It's not necessarily we're going to be in IVF in 2 weeks.
Yes, exactly. That's it. You start the process. Yeah, trying to figure out what the problem might be, whether it's the man or the woman. Then I get asked all the time about ovulation tests, kits, home tests.
Sure.
What do you think?
Yeah, the advice we give, I suppose, in general, I think if you are using them and they're coming up positive, that's great. Put it away now. You know, like, don't live your life based on your ovulation.
Okay.
Just try, get used to it, and try have intercourse to make it not a clinical activity.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know, like a procedure.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, like, it's just, you can just take all the romance out of life really quick.
Yeah,
do you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if it's working, great. You're ovulating. That's what you want to know.
Forget about it. Okay. Lovely advice.
If you've used them a couple of months and 1 month they came up and another they didn't, you might not ovulate properly.
Yeah.
It might be worth talking to a fertility specialist or your GP to do like bloods 7 days before your anticipated next period.
Yes.
If those levels are over 29, we're usually quite confident that you did ovulate spontaneously.
Day 21 progesterone or
So we call it day 21, which confuses everyone, I think.
Yes, because it depends on your cycle length.
Exactly. Okay. If you have a 37 day cycle, it's day 30 then.
Yes.
It's just 7 days before your anticipated period.
Oh, okay.
Which is sort of rubbish if you have an irregular cycle.
I know, and so many of us do. But that's okay. It's a really nice way of I need to remember that for myself. So 7 days before, because I used to learn it as day 21 progesterone. And then the other way was of learning it was halfway through the second half of your cycle.
Yeah.
But like
confuse things.
And I'd be there like with a calculator. So yeah, 7 days before your predicted period.
Period. Okay. Or if you used an ovulation kit and it kind of was a wobbly positive, 7 days later you could get your GP to test it.
Okay.
And if your progesterone is high, you probably have ovulated.
You've ovulated. Okay, that's really nice advice. And then this, so do you like, should you be focusing like all of your efforts of intercourse on around ovulation, or like is it like what should you do, what shouldn't you do?
Okay,
this is a difficult question.
Yeah, but it varies depending on who you speak with.
Okay,
so I always kind of approach it like that. For me, focusing everything onto the center of a cycle is literally going to be so intensely pressurized, like, you know, it becomes very difficult. But then can you realistically have intercourse 3 times a week every week for a year?
I'm so glad you said that.
I mean, if you want to, that's probably the ideal situation. But realistically, like, who does it?
Yeah. Like, I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah, your stamina is unreal. No, I think it's like something like, what would I say? It's probably something like, focus in and around there. Obsessed with this.
Yes, okay.
Sperm lives in cervical mucus for 5 days around the time of ovulation.
Yes.
So have, like, now I've told tons of people this and no one listens to me anyway, but.
Yeah, go on, say it again.
You know, like, when you're ovulating, that's fine. The egg is being released. But if sperm is there waiting for the egg, your chances are way better.
Okay. Yes. So you're kind of, would you say in and around like that window?
Yeah. So if you've got a 28-day cycle, just like, I don't know, like day 9, day 12, you know, day 14, you're fine. You're okay. Fine. You've tried. Like, that is trying.
Yes.
Some people are telling me they tried every day. I'm like, that cannot have been fun. Like,
yeah, I know that. Yeah, you absolutely. Know? That is stressful.
Pressurizing what mightn't need to be that.
Yeah. And like, and fertility and trouble conceiving is so difficult psychologically on couples without mm-hmm. adding that sort of like just military kind of approach to it.
Exactly. And I try talk to people outside of, say, the fertility thing to explain that people who get pregnant easily or within 6 months or 8 months or whatever, they didn't do something right and you were doing something wrong. It's just a bit of luck, unfortunately.
Yes.
You know, they just like... You know, I hear people give others advice and I'm like, it's not scientific. Yeah. It can't help you. Like when you're trying to work this problem out in your head and you think, okay, they had intercourse at 8 p.m., you know, facing north, you know, after eating lemons and that's how I'm going to get pregnant.
It's like, I know.
It's just really hard on couples. I think people need to be careful with what advice they share.
I completely agree. And what advice you take or who you talk to or, you know, because it's just, and I spoke as well with Alison Keating, psychologist, and we talked about this in terms of mental health. You know, doling out advice to your friends, like you're not their psychologist, you're not their fertility specialist. So you can be supportive and just in a kind way and support people. But advice, I would say, no.
Yeah, you know? We don't. I actually heard that podcast and I loved it.
Yeah, thank you for listening.
Like this idea of advice of friends advising each other on what they did and what works for them, and it used to be like, you know, I used to also think, God, people in good relationships, like, it's not that they're better than you or worse than you. They might have some skills that you need to take note of, but they don't know what's going to be right for you anyway.
Sure.
So when people say, you know, you need to look for this and you need to look for that and you need to look for the other, it's the same with all of your health and like all of this fertility area. You just need to be careful with what you offer people and they offer you.
Totally. And as well, that point that you made earlier is all about online, like being online, and particularly for IVF. I think that there's a lot of stress and intensity and a lot of emotion about IVF online. And, you know, I think that if anybody is going through IVF or thinking about it, like, your page is the one to follow, because it's just information, like unbiased information. But if you're looking at somebody who's going another round, just saying, you know, I don't like the injections, or and they're kind of, you know, that might not be your experience. So like, just, you know, everybody's case is so different.
Exactly. Everybody is so different. So I break like fertility definitely down into, there is the problem and I can help give you the facts, and then there is the you. And you and I are going through the same thing in a totally different way.
Yeah.
You know, because I have all my weird things that I do to cope. And
yeah.
You,
yeah, you know? Exactly. I know, we're all.
Do you know what I mean? So it's like, it's 50% the medical problem and then 50% who it's happening to.
Yes.
So if you listen to my version of accounts, it could be way better or way worse than you feel. And I don't think it's going to help either way.
Yeah.
Unless we're all approaching it in just a sharing so that we can open up rather than sharing so we're teaching people or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But those skills, like, I don't even have them yet. You know, as in my other parts of life.
Yeah, so I know. Yeah.
Maybe that comes with age. I'm not sure.
I don't know. Who knows? Hopefully, maybe as we get a little bit older. So tell me, okay, so right, if you go to, it's established that you're having difficulty conceiving.
Sure.
There'll be tests done for men and women.
Mm-hmm.
What can you expect as a couple who have, okay, so you've made your appointment day one to see the clinic. Is it blood tests? Is it urine tests?
Yes, so it'll be blood tests. And they're done early in the cycle. And then your day 21, and I'm putting those in. Because it's that progesterone test. And your AMH, we would always test that.
Okay.
The most important to you are the AMH and FSH.
Yes, day 3 FSH?
Exactly. Yeah. Two, okay. 3 or 4, it's acceptable. Over a weekend,
okay. Yes, but those are the little practical things that are so important.
That change
to
everything
you.
For yeah, people. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So 2, 3, or 4. Day 3 is sort of the benchmark, you know, that we talk.
Guide.
But day 2, 3, or 4, we do all these tests. And then what will essentially happen is we'll do a semen analysis for the male.
Yeah.
You'll get your results prior, usually, to the meeting. Some people don't want it. That's fine. Mm-hmm. You come in and meet a doctor who will talk you through what each area and what each blood result means, what sort of a semen analysis result we have and what this might mean for the future. We do an internal transvaginal scan.
Yes.
We have a really good look. You can't do them abdominally. It's not detailed enough for gynae stuff. So we see the ovaries and we count, the little antral follicles on both ovaries.
Yes.
We look to see, is there any evidence of a blocked tube, a fibroid, a polyp? Like, there are structural things that we need to be aware of.
Yes.
So now we have hormones. So how is the body physically working?
Yeah.
Then we've got the actual structures. We've got the male side. And then the last thing we'd need to know is tubes. That wouldn't be a consultation. Mm. It's usually done afterward.
Yes.
Where we will do either internal, like a surgery, or we just push a contrast medium through the cervix up through the uterus and it should spill out through the tubes under x-ray.
Yes.
And then we never know if the tubes work as such, if the little villi in them are picking up the egg and bringing it up, but at least we know they're not damaged.
Sure, they're not blocked completely.
Exactly.
Okay. So, and I think what you're describing there, so is that a what people call like a lapendi?
So the lapendi is the internal keyhole surgery where they can physically look with a camera on that.
Yeah.
And the HSG is the x-ray version of that.
Okay, so you don't necessarily need to do the surgery.
Not necessarily.
Okay, so depending on what your clinic recommends for you.
Exactly. Okay. If you do see something where you think maybe there's something funny going on there.
Yes.
I recommend strongly the lapendi. Have somebody look at it.
Sure.
And if it's blocked, they could close it off, take it out, whatever. If there's a cyst there, they can physically help you.
Sure.
The x-ray is just a test.
Sure, yes.
You will end up in with a lapendi if it's needed.
Okay. And will every woman get that? Do they or no?
Not every woman.
Okay.
But I suppose as time has gone on and we've understood more about blocked tubes and their significance. Because even let's say your right tube is blocked and it's filling with fluid and that fluid becomes toxic to implantation. And then you ovulate and have fertilization on the left, in the left tube, and it comes down and it goes to implant, you could have this toxic fluid that reduces your chance of pregnancy anyway.
Okay, yeah.
So we've sort of become more proactive to tubes. They're so important.
Yes.
Yeah. If they're blocked, not only do they not work, but maybe they could cause harm.
Okay.
Not always, but
yes,
it's worth being aware of.
Sure.
So that somebody doesn't try for a year, get pregnant, and then, you know, something be there that would suggest maybe we should have acted retrospectively.
Yeah,
we like to kind of, do you know?
Okay. And so the most common cause then of blocked tubes is what? An STI or pelvic inflammatory disease
usually. Maybe previous surgery. Like if you have something like, you know, Crohn's disease and they've gone in and they've performed lots of operations or a ruptured appendix or maybe something where we weren't gynae focused when we had to overcome another issue, and now there's scar tissue there that might like an adhesion might have closed the tube or blocked the tube.
Okay, yeah. I didn't actually know that. So adhesions are kind of scar tissue from old surgery that can actually block the tube from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's really interesting.
Or like move it to a difficult position where then, you know, it's not really functioning properly anymore.
Yeah. Okay, that's really interesting. So then talking about as well about structural things. So structural things that might cause problems for fertility, like, you know what I get asked a lot, and I'm pretty sure the answer is no, but retroverted uterus doesn't make a difference to your fertility.
It actually makes an embryo transfer easier.
Does it? Okay, interesting.
Yeah, but it makes scanning it's
tricky.
Much more uncomfortable.
Yeah,
because it's all, if you've got a retroverted uterus, your uterus, the top of it will say tilts towards your spine rather than forward into your pelvis, right?
Yeah.
So when we're scanning, we kind of have to go back. So you feel it a lot in your back passage, let's say.
Okay, yeah.
But in general, no. And it doesn't matter to labour or anything like that. It hasn't mattered.
Yes.
You know, it's a variation of normal.
Normal, yeah. Got you. Okay, and then we talked a little bit actually before we recorded. You mentioned Clomid, which is an interesting part of fertility. So what is Clomid? What does it do and who needs it?
Okay, so the FSH we were talking about, right, is how much follicle stimulating hormone, that's what it stands for, does your pituitary gland need to release to make one follicle, which is the little structure that has fluid that holds and matures that little immature egg in your ovary in each cycle. So how much, how hard is your pituitary working releasing that to grow one follicle? What can happen if you've got an imbalance in hormones is you don't have regular cycles and you need to take something to make, to override so that your pituitary starts releasing this FSH. So that's what Clomid or Letrozole essentially is doing. It's trying to grow a follicle earlier so that you get a regular cycle and a chance to conceive. But what I hear a lot is people that have regular cycles are getting it. Which is sort of counterintuitive, because if you are ovulating, ovulation induction is not really going to help. And it might increase your risk of multiple pregnancies. Which some people, I do know, my friend is like, I want twins, you know.
Some people, she really does.
But I'm like, okay, but what if they come really early? What if there's complications in your labor or like... we want you to have one healthy family, one at a time, and no unnecessary stress in life, you know?
Totally, yeah. Because there is a lot of that, kind of that thought process, I think, like around IVF and things like that. And I think, look, if you conceive twins naturally, and that's great.
But amazing. Amazing. But I suppose it's like anything, you know, like if it happens, it happens. Amazing. But do you really want to increase your risks of anything?
Yes, exactly. Okay, so that's... And I, then do GPs, some GPs give Clomid or no? I mean, I never have.
Yeah, they do. And I don't... I'm always careful. I'm not criticising anything, but... If I'm giving Clomid, like, you know, or Letrozole, or we're doing any of these ovulation induction therapies, we do the internal scans, we track the follicle development, we give an injection to ensure ovulation has occurred, and then you have intercourse around that time. So it massively increases it. What if you're taking it and you have four follicles? So quadruplets is the risk. And then you're not being scanned. It makes me a little bit nervous, but that's because I'm coming from
it. It makes me nervous too. It makes me nervous. I mean, I would never do it. But look, I don't know. Maybe some GPs are more experienced than others. But yeah, I think that I would leave it in the...
I think it's a fertility clinic area. Or who, somebody who can scan you to know where you're at. And that it's safe.
Okay. Can I ask you about courses of IVF? Because, so I did IVF. Which I think was a good learning experience for me.
I can imagine.
because now I feel like I have some idea. But with that said, I have an idea of what that short course. So I did something that was like over the course of maybe, it was like 10 days, 2 weeks maximum. So I did, what is that called?
Short cycle.
Okay. So I did that. And then it was like, I have to say, now look, maybe it's different because I'm very used to needles and all the rest of it. Look, I think like it was... It was fine, like physically, I have to say, like the injections every night. I was tired. That was the that was the main thing that I felt. Then the things like the way you described the transvaginal ultrasound, fine. And then the egg retrieval, fine. You know, so it was really like, I don't think people need to be as scared of it as they maybe, as people think you might need to be. Like, but with that said, I know I did the short course and I'm a doctor, so I'm used to needles. But it's not as scary, I think, as a lot of people make out.
No, I agree. So it is such a difficult area. So I completely agree with where you're coming from, and you're definitely not alone. But because it's so personal, everybody has their own feelings and experience around it. And everybody's is to be respected and, you know, and accepted, I think. Do you know? Like, I suppose... if you're having your fifth cycle of IVF, it's definitely a lot harder than your first.
Okay, yeah, like that's such a good point. And I feel like my experience of IVF is so not the norm as well, because, you know, I actually kind of had, like, I liked it because it was like this, like, lovely kind of like nice thing where it was like positive and IVF. And because all of my other appointments at the time were cancer and I hated them. So IVF for me then was like this really lovely thing that I really enjoyed. But then... If it's your fifth round, like, you know, that's a hard
and
place
it's
to
just
be.
It's where you're at, I think, and it's also how the drugs and the cycle and the toll, like, on your body has like been taken. And then maybe like it's difficult in your relationship and maybe you've been trying for 2 years before you ever start. Yeah. So everyone is so different.
Yeah.
They do say, like, when we went to a talk in Holles Street about freezing, say, ovarian tissue for children.
Yeah, yeah.
The parents overwhelmingly fed back that same information. Fertility is so positive when you're planning it going forward rather than acting immediately, it seems.
That's when the stress happens. Mm. And that's when the people get really upset and just frustrated. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. And I can totally understand that.
Yes.
Then the short cycle is always preferred, but it's only for, like, they do break down in different criteria.
Yes.
What suits different types.
I mean, so we had to do it. I was on the clock because I had to have surgery for mm-hmm. my cancer. So we just had to get it done really quickly and just move. So that's why we did the short course. So I guess probably a lot of like what cancer patients, that's what they do, or no?
The cancer patients in general will do short cycles because we are kind of negotiating a timeline with another medical team.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah. And that would be very similar for the gentlemen freezing sperm that are about to undergo chemo for, you know, their own reasons. So we are usually cycles, but we tend to have short cycles for polycystic ovaries or ovarian syndrome, one or the other, they're not the same thing, where we think we might get loads and loads and loads. So we both have kind of, we can stop that cycle if we're getting into a kind of a nervous place.
Okay.
And we can also give a different trigger if we do a short cycle that reduces any health risks to that person.
And are you, what is the condition I think that you're talking about?
Ovarian hyperstimulation.
Yes, I was so scared of that. I was so scared.
I know, it is scary.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the only thing I'd be like, you know, making people completely aware about. You know, that's where, if you have naturally maybe, you know, 20, 30 follicles in your ovaries, when we start to stimulate, if your ovaries get that big, you can start leaking fluid into your pelvis and that sort of keeps going.
Yeah.
Particularly if you get pregnant, and we need to monitor it and be very careful with those kind of clients that, you know, will face something like that. So we tend to stick with the short cycle so we could stop it or change it or give this safer trigger, as we call it, in order to kind of organize the egg collection and have mature eggs. With the long cycle, you might end up on the pill or not necessarily on the pill.
Okay.
And then you downregulate. So you start an injection for like 10, 12 days so the pill has stopped you from ovulating.
Okay.
It maintains that quiet ovary, so like, and allows like maybe a little bit of extra recruitment in an ideal case of follicles. So if you've got a lower AMH, not very low, but low-ish, they tend to stick with this longer protocol.
Okay.
And then when you'll shed the lining of your womb and when we're at an absolute baseline. So there's not your ovaries, everything is quiet, nothing's going on. Then we give this high level of FSH to really drive the ovaries.
Okay. So then how long is that longer?
So the longer one, you're talking from the first day, like 3 weeks is going to be the pill-ish.
Okay.
You're talking maybe 6 to 8 weeks from pill to maybe pregnancy test.
Yes.
You know,
okay.
With the short cycle, you're talking like 10 days even of injections, maybe like that would be the average, maybe a little bit more.
Yeah.
And then you have your 5 days embryo development and then 2 weeks to test if you're, you know, going through
that
kind of standard cycle or whatever and you're putting embryo back.
Yeah.
But yeah, like those 2 weeks are torture for everyone.
Yeah, they're hard. You just have to try just put it out of your head and
as
go for lots and lots and lots of walks.
Yeah. And that's where I'd say, like, some people use acupuncture, some people use whatever.
Yeah.
I think, like, I'm such a major fan of therapy, though. I think it's so good to be proactive about where you're at and what you can change and whatever. And you can sit down and talk to a professional about how scared you are.
Yes.
If you talk to me, as much as I want to be there, I want to explain statistics
and problem solve.
It's a different approach for the nurse or the doctor on your team because we want you to be pregnant.
Sure.
We're like in it with you. Whereas, I really think if I were to do anything throughout a cycle, I would probably speak to somebody.
That's a really nice bit of advice because, and I know that that the clinics as well, they link up with therapists, don't they, that they recommend. Mm-hmm. And as well, it can be difficult to talk to your partner and things like that as well. Because, you know, I mean, I know, say, not particularly with IVF, but say going through any sort of a health treatment, Peter would always be like, no, everything will be great, everything will be fine. And I'd be like, can you just allow me, can you just allow me to be worried and annoyed here for a minute? Yeah. So, you know, that, yeah, therapy is a great, great suggestion. You know, just somebody just to talk to.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and it's just the neutral party. And yeah, you'll say things and be like, oh, God, do I think that? And yeah, you'll learn about you and how you can cope with things, and you'll find your own ways forward.
Yeah.
Like, I really think of all of them. Like, a lot of the time, the acupuncturists actually act as sort of therapists.
Yes. Yeah.
To be honest, like, yeah, or reflexologists or whatever support people are sure, you know, taking as an add-on to their treatment or whatever,
yeah,
you know?
Okay, yeah, that's a really nice point. And then, so, other smaller things actually I've been trying to ask you. Yogurt, dairy, are we supposed to do that? Your face. I was told to do that, so I bought like a million yogurts. Yeah. When we did IVF, our whole fridge was like all the injections. It was all the injections on once. I mean, no other food. And I showed pictures to my friends. They were like, why is there no other food in your house? But it was all yogurts. Is that real? The dairy? Because
so
I was scared of
ovarian
hyperstimulation.
Yes, okay.
That's what I was scared of.
So what it is it's funny how things change, how the information okay, sort of, like, I don't know how that ever came to be a thing, but okay, what I think it is when you are at risk of ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome, the fluid that will collect around your pelvis
yeah,
is protein
yeah,
rich.
Okay.
So it'll drag it out of your bloodstream, your actual body, and just deposit it in a, you know, a yeah, big, you know, liter or so of fluid in the pelvis, let's yeah, say, if you're actually hyperstimulating.
Yes.
So in order to counteract the tiredness and the, you know, the thing, you're going to take in more protein.
Okay.
But you still want to go to the doctor if you're worried about anything.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
You want your scans, but that is it. It okay, it does reduce the risk of tiredness and that. But I've seen it's kind of changed into like, it helps with IVF. I don't think it helps with
no, IVF. No, no, because I looked up the evidence, but this is how you become, you know, patients instead of a doctor. Like, I couldn't find any evidence, and I didn't know why I was eating all the yogurts. But
I'd be the exact same. Like, you're like, there might be something, so I'm going to do it. Yeah, yeah.
But I should say as well, ovarian hyperstimulation is very uncommon. Very,
extremely
like, yeah,
just, uncommon.
Yeah.
It's literally like, the like, if you are in that risk, they will discuss it with you.
Sure,
that's
and they'll
the way
mind
I'd
you.
Say it. And you're so minded, you're so watched. And
you are, it's just, I can't say, like, look, and I went to the Waterstone Clinic, this is not an advertisement, but you are just wrapped up in a bit of cotton wool and minded and taken through every step of the way. You're really taken care of.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know of anyone working like within any of our units that doesn't like their job. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like, we want, it's weird. You become invested and you're trying to stay neutral, but you're like, please
yeah,
be pregnant. Like, you know when someone's going to test, but you don't want to be on top of them, ringing them. So, yeah, like, I think fertility people are
passionate
about it.
Yeah.
And we really do try mind people.
No,
so don't be
do,
that scared of us.
Yeah, yeah, no, but that's it. There is nothing to be scared about. While it might be emotionally challenging and psychologically challenging, it's actually not a scary place to
no,
be. Yeah.
No,
it
I
really
don't think
isn't.
So. Yeah,
not
I don't
at
think
all.
So.
Yeah.
And it's tends like we can be positive in any situation we're in, you know, the
sure,
way and mind people as best we can.
Yeah. Absolutely. Is there anything else that we should talk, you would like to say that's important about fertility or IVF? Is there anything else that kind of you would like
I think
to say?
It's a really hard message to get across. This is my main one. But the people who will be researching all of this are those going through the journey. And it's so private and it's so personal, but it's 1 in 5 couples in Ireland.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so it's
yeah,
not uncommon.
No.
The problem is nobody outside of the world of fertility is really looking at it yet.
Mm.
And they're saying silly things and whatever. So anytime anyone ever can guide people towards learning about fertility, I highly recommend it. It will help the couples in fertility, you know, maybe difficulty or whatever, to have a more supportive community.
Yeah. Network. Yeah.
And it will also help, you know, people realize what it actually is and be more careful with silly opinions that are uneducated or whatever way you want to say, uninformed, let's say.
Uninformed, absolutely. So yeah, that's where we need to maybe do work, as you say, because at the start of the conversation you said, you know, we get so much information about contraception and all the rest of it. We
mm-hmm,
need to start talking more about fertility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And supporting each other.
Yes. Okay, thank you so
thank
much
you
for
so
coming
much
today, Laura. It was an absolute pleasure to have you. Thank you.
Thanks, Jane.